Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Jennifer Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. Today's topic is HPV, that's human papilloma wart virus. Is it the scourge of the century or just another silly love song? And just to bring people up to speed on this, HPV is a virus believed to be sexually transmitted and believed to be the culprit for cervical cancer. So today I'm going to examine just the whole HPV situation from a kind of scientific numbers angle and looking at, of course, as always, their numbers, my analysis, and see where it leads us. I mean, what is HPV really? Is it this big, horrible thing that's going to kill us all, or is it just another silly love song? So, Just Another Silly Love Song is from Paul McCartney, and I think we need to understand a few lyrics of the song, and it will really help tremendously tonight. And so Paul McCartney says, this is a singer, for those of you who are younger, "You don't think that people would have had enough of silly love songs, but look around me and I see it ain't so. Some people want to fill the world with silly love songs, and what's wrong with that? I'd like to know." And so he's going to sing this love song. And the great thing is, another paragraph he says is, "Love doesn't come in a minute. Sometimes it doesn't come at all. I only know that when I'm in it, it isn't silly. Love isn't silly. It isn't silly at all." Okay, so he's saying that love, say human papilloma wart virus, maybe it doesn't come in a minute or kill in a minute, and maybe it doesn't kill at all. We don't know. We'll see about that. But what about silly? What does silly mean? Silly means trifling, and I looked this up in the dictionary, lacking in importance or solid worth, of little weight or importance, having no sound basis, lacking in seriousness. So let's take a look at HPV and take a look at that. First of all, what raised my suspicion? What made me suspect that human papilloma wart virus might be something of no significance, something trivial, trifling? Well, I guess it's best characterized in my description of this, of today's talk, which is that I did pap smears for 19 years, screened ladies diligently, and did not detect a single case of cervical cancer. Didn't miss one either. So what happened? Was there no cervical cancer to detect? So that's what the first thing that made me a little bit suspicious was in the 19 years of doing pap smears, not only did I not detect a single case of cervical cancer, but didn't even detect a single case of a pap smear abnormal enough to require the next step. Or I'd say two cervical cancer, not cervical cancer, but pap smears required further attention, and none of them were cervical cancer. And this is 19 years. That's a long time. So today I'm going to do is look into this. And this information that I'm about to share with you comes from www.cdc.gov/std/HPV/STD-FACT-HPV.HTF. I think it's important to get this information from the authorities. And it says, in most cases, human papilloma wart virus goes away on its own and does not cause any health problems. In most cases, that's 51% of people, it does not cause any health problems. But when it does not go away, it can cause health problems. That means it also cannot. So it can is something less than 50%. So get this. Half of them go away on their own. Other ones that don't, less than half, can cause health problems of any kind. So now we're down to 25% or less of people might get genital warts from their human papilloma wart virus and might get cancer. Okay, so we're going to nail this down even more as we go along. So we're saying HPV, human papilloma wart virus, is the most common sexually transmitted infection. It is different virus than HIV or HSV. We don't need to get into that, but we just need to know it's different. So HPV, subject of today's talk, is so common, get this, that nearly all sexually active men and women get it. Let me repeat this. So this is a virus that infects nearly all sexually active men and women at some point in their lives. There are many different types. Some types can cause health problems, including genital warts and cancers. But there are vaccines that can stop these health problems from happening. But get this. So nearly all, we're going to round it up to 100%. So let's get some numbers here. So 100% of men and women will get human papillomavirus at some point in their lives. That's if they have sex. This is really striking because it says nearly all. Now, some people just don't have sex that often. And so those people could get human papilloma wart virus as well. So, okay, so we got it. I guess you guys should all be, everybody should be squirming in their seats right about now. So in most cases, HPV, they go away on its own. And so does it cause cancer? There's a question. If the government.gov is answering this question for us. It can cause cervical cancer and other cancers, including cancer of the vulva, vagina, penis, or anus. Now, I'm only going to talk about cervical cancer because I have death numbers, death statistics for cervical cancer. It can also cause cancer on the back of the throat, including the base of the tongue and tonsils. Okay. Now, genital warts, it can cause that. That can be treated by you or your physician. Now, if left untreated, genital warts can go away, stay the same, or grow in size. In other words, they're harmless. They don't cause cancer. So, but what else does HPV cause? Human papilloma wart virus. What does it cause? Well, it causes warts on your feet. It also causes those warts on your hands. And this says HPV occurring on the foot or toes is usually self-limiting. Self-limiting, what does that mean? It means it goes away by itself. And what percent of the population has warts on their feet? 10%, even though it was that type. Now, human papillomavirus types 1, 2, 4, 60, or 63, 57, 65, 66, and 156 have caused warts. All right, got it. Now, let's talk about cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is caused by types 16 and 18, and they cause 70% of all cervical cancers. What does that mean? It It means 30% of cervical cancers are not caused by human papilloma wart virus type 16 and 18. So why the big deal over this human papilloma wart virus? It sounds like, I mean, if ladies need to get pap smears every 1 to 5 years throughout their reproductive life or who knows the rest of their life, if we have women taking chemotherapy, getting radiation, having the cervix burned off with a hot metal loop, I mean, this has got to be serious. So let's see who's dying. Now, if we look at this, you gotta you know, realize that 250,000 Americans died in 2013. That was 2,400,000+. So let's round it up to 2.5 million. So 2.5 million Americans die every year. 3,939 women in the United States died from cervical cancer. This is from 2010, unfortunately the latest year for which the government has statistics. You would think that with all the surveillance they have in place, they could count the cervical cancer deaths with less than a 4-year lag time, but that is not the case. All right, so we know that 4,000 women died from cervical cancer in 2010. I'm going to guess, and it's only a guess, let's just go with the government's figures that these vaccines everyone's getting are somehow effective. Maybe that number is going down. Maybe it's not, but let's just stick with that number, 3,900. Now, if we mosey on over to www.cdc.gov/cancer/HPV/statistics/cervical.htm, we find that 7 women per 100,000 die each year of cervical cancer. Again, we're talking 2010-2012. That means in any given year, if you are a woman, you have a chance of 1 in 14,285 of dying of cervical cancer. Amazing. Now, if we do take the reciprocal of 14,000, then that tells us the risk that any one person has in any one year of dying of cervical cancer. So we're going to calculate here lifetime risk. So you take the reciprocal of 14,285. Average lady in the United States lives to be 80 years old. Start screening at age 25. 80 minus 25 is 55. So 55 years, this lady's at risk for cervical cancer. So 55 times the reciprocal of 14,285, that gives us, and I rounded up to be generous, 0.4% chance of dying, lifetime risk of dying of cervical cancer. Yes. And if you take that 0.4% and round it to the nearest percent, that would be just about 0%. So we have here human papilloma wart virus that infects everyone, if you've had sex, you've had it, and your chances of dying of it, lifetime risk, 0.4% women. So let's dig a little deeper. Where does this come from? I mean, where else can HPV be found except humans? And even better yet, where on humans can it be found? For this, we have to turn to the National Library of Medicine. That's at www.ncbi.nlm.nih.gov/PMC/articles/PMC136724/. Okay, so that's where you find it. And what does it say here? It says, papillomaviruses are a diverse group of viruses which can induce, that means cause, lesions in the skin and mucosa. And to date, more than 90... More than 90 have been identified. That's why these big numbers, like a size 63. So there's 90 different strains. However, these have been fully characterized genetically, and in addition, 100 types, new types, have been identified and partially sequenced in a number of vertebrate species. Yes. Some of these animal types have been implicated in cancers. Amazing. And it's been found, let's see the animals that it has been found in. It's, of course, been found in baboons. What good would it be if it hadn't been? But it's found in cows. Yes, cows. Amazing. So HPV is commonly present in the healthy skin of healthy humans as a presumed commensal agent. What does that mean? That means human papillomavirus virus is found in the skin of healthy people, and that this virus lives with people in a healthy, non-disease state. So, in other words, it doesn't seem to cause cancer in the skin of healthy people, or in the skin at all, actually. This is shocking and amazing. So if we move down over to the .gov cancer site, www.cancer.gov/cancer-topics/fact sheet/cancer-advances-in-focus/cervical, it says, treatment with radiation and chemotherapy creates a 5-year survival of 75%. This is not very impressive, I'm telling you. Not at all. Now, of course, there's a bunch of vaccines you could take, and the vaccines are against types 16 and 18, and these cause a majority of cancers. That's 51%. I'm using the number 51% because government gives no number, and so majority means more than 50%, so we'll give them credit, 51%. Now, so we have a vaccine then that does not even protect against all of the strains that cause cervical cancer. Okay, got it. Now, let's do some calculations here. I know I've done a lot already, but I think we need to do a few more. We want to predict, and it's all about prediction. You know, you go to the witch doctor, you say, witch doctor, will I be happy? Will I be healthy? Will I be wealthy? You want to know the future. You go to the doctor, you say, doctor, if I have an HPV infection, will it kill me? Will it shorten my life? And so you want to know. So this is what, so we're going to do that calculation for you right now so you don't have to plague your doctor with this question that he's not prepared to answer. Okay, so your lifetime risk of getting human papillomavirus virus is 100%. Your lifetime risk of dying from it in the form of cervical cancer is actually 0.36%. Why? Well, because the chance of dying of cervical cancer, and this is for women, by the way, you guys, relax, is 0.4%, but only 91% of those have the human papillomavirus virus. 9% of women who die of cervical cancer have no evidence whatever of having the virus. Interesting. So there must be another cause for cervical cancer. I would suggest we track down that other cause, whatever it is. But anyway, let's calculate the positive predictive value of having the HPV virus. So if you are positive for the HPV virus, what are your chances of dying of cervical cancer? Okay, so total people with cervical cancer who have a positive test, that this is a coarse gross number, so 0.36% of women will die of cervical cancer and be positive for HPV. That's a lifetime risk. All right. So I looked this up. How do we calculate positive predictive value? Well, we take the true positives, in this case 0.36, and we divide it by the true positives, 0.36, plus the false positive, 99.64, because we know 100% of all people are going to be positive for HPV at some point in their life. So if we divide the true positives, the 0.36%, they're destined to die from this awful disease, and divided by the percent who are positive for HPV, which is 100, we get a number of 0.0036. It's a predictive value. A good test has a predictive value of point something. And so this is 0.0036. So let's round it up to nearest percent. Nearest percent would give us zero. So the positive predictive value of a test that shows you have human papillomavirus virus is 0%. It has no predictive value. It in no way predicts that you're going to die of cervical cancer. Isn't that amazing? You know, this is their scientific numbers, their scientific method, you know. No imagination here at all. This is just straight numbers, guys. It's been really just a dry broadcast so far. So our challenge here then is to take a look at what's going on. Now, let's also take a look at the success rate of cancer screening for cervical cancer. And I looked over the .gov website. The best I could find is they believe they prevented 60% of cervical cancers by subjecting women to pap smears. Now, 60% of nothing is still nothing. So what we are talking about then is just another silly love song. So if you have human papilloma virus, the chances are that it's going to negatively impact your life is, by any calculation, 0%. In other words, you gotta round up to something. You know, you can't just have these numbers with all these zeros, 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 and zeros after the decimal, zero before the decimal point, all these zeros after the decimal point at some point. So if we say then that if we can't round it up to 1%, then we're going to call it zero, then a woman's chances of dying of cervical cancer are basically zero. And this is why, after 19 years of diligently screening, I was unable to find even one pap smear that could be cervical cancer. Now, this is a common experience, by the way, of doctors, you know, going decades without finding a positive cervical cancer test. And this feeling that cervical cancer merits annual pap smears or even pap smear every 5 years for this wart virus, or that it merits vaccinating every single child, even maybe several times, I think they're talking about boosters now, you have to wonder and kind of scratch your head, because a person's lifetime risk of dying of this is 0%. Again, that's rounding. If you don't want to round, fine. It's 0.4% chance of dying of cervical cancer. The chance of that cervical cancer being caused by the virus and dying of it is 0.36%. The predictive value of doing any kind of screening test for the human papillomavirus virus is 0%. So what am I saying? I'm saying that if we want to save the lives of this minuscule but important population, these 4,000 ladies who are destined to die of cervical cancer at some point in their lives, there needs to be another marker besides the human papillomavirus virus, because its presence is 99.64% of the time, its presence is associated with health, we say good health. And so using this virus as an indication for clinical action, intervention of any kind is actually irresponsible, since its presence appears to be highly correlated with good health. Now, this is another sensitive topic. We'll call this topic designing diseases. So what has happened here then is we've had a disease state designed. We've picked something, cervical cancer, which rarely kills anyone just because it's such a rare disease. And then we picked a virus, which while 91% of people dying of cervical cancer have it, 100% of people who don't die of cervical cancer have it. So in other words, having the virus is almost a negative predictor of dying of cervical cancer, because 100% of people who don't die have it for sure, and other ones who die, only 91% have it. So you can't argue that the virus is more highly associated with this negative outcome, which is death from cervical cancer. Now, I didn't look at cervical cancer, period. I just looked at death from cervical cancer, because we're not looking at harmless conditions. We're not looking at trivial things. You know, we're looking at things that people die of. Now, when you compound this by saying that these ladies who have cervical cancer are being treated by chemotherapy and radiation, now you have to really scratch your head. Well, wait a minute. How many of these 4,000 deaths were from chemotherapy or radiation? I had a patient who died of cervical cancer. So she's already diagnosed as having cervical cancer before I met her. And so she had cervical cancer, and you know, she saw the cancer guy, and he gave her options, whatever. And she died in the middle of chemotherapy, which is, of course, shocking. And so it's not clear if the chemotherapy killed her or if the cervical cancer killed her. So this is really a conundrum. But I would say, given these numbers, it's certainly reasonable to take your chances of getting cervical cancer. When you look at these numbers, a pap smear makes absolutely no sense at all if you're looking for cervical cancer. Now, if you're looking for something else, cheap thrills, you know, a quick feel, a look at somebody's private parts, it makes a lot of sense. Or you're just trying to maybe drum up some revenue, it makes sense. But a pap smear as a method of detecting cervical cancer, saving lives from cervical cancer, is incredibly inefficient to subject 100% of women to something that's only going to affect 0.4 of them in their whole lifetime. So the pap smear as a strategy for preventing death from cervical cancer doesn't make sense, because death from cervical cancer happens so infrequently. And so there needs to be another method, another way of deciding who is at risk for cervical cancer. And so probably a lifestyle study would be in order. And guess what? They've done these lifestyle studies. So women's chances of getting an abnormal pap smear is associated with what? A diet low in tomatoes. A diet low in tomatoes. That's right, ladies. Eat your tomatoes. This is really shocking that we can just tell ladies to eat more tomatoes and skip the pap smear and the colonoscopy and the cryosurgery and the chemotherapy and the radiation therapy. So the HPV virus appeared to be, like I said, just another silly love song. something that's trivial, frivolous, trifling, and of little value or importance, and lacking in significance or solid worth. So what should ladies do instead? Well, definitely eat your tomatoes, I'll tell you that. But really, anything that you are asked to do that takes time or money that's associated with cervical cancer, your time or money is better spent someplace else. So unless you actually get cervical cancer, and in which case, you know, kind of take it from there. I actually had an aunt who died of cervical cancer. We were all shocked. We said, how could you die of cervical cancer? Because, you know our family history at least back, I don't know, five generations, and no one's ever died of cervical cancer, or any other cancer for that matter. And so this generation was the second generation to get cancer, which means, of course, it couldn't possibly have been genetic. But she had a diet of zero vegetables. That I can tell you. Diet of zero vegetables and 100% packaged foods. So she was definitely not getting her tomatoes. But I think that, again, the strategy of taking vaccines, getting pap smears, is simply a disease design paradigm designed to get people to spend more money, more time, and more resources looking for something. In this case, I can tell you they're not going to find it in 99.64% of women. And so it's simply something to amuse and entertain the doctor and the patient, at the same time just emptying the poor woman's pockets. And, of course, the cute thing is they've got women so indoctrinated into this that getting a insurance plan that will cover your annual pap smears is a way that women determine that they have a superior health program. So let's take a look at our chat room. People can call in if they have questions about pap smears, cervical cancers, or anything like that. But it seems to be a real non-issue. You can't substantially improve the health of a population by addressing a disease that is destined to kill less than 0.5% of that population. And in women's care and OBGYN, the pap smear has become the cornerstone of intervention. And so then you have to kind of reject that whole strategy or paradigm. Now the next thing is now they're trying to tell men that they need to get HPV vaccines to keep them from spreading HPV to their partners, when we know that HPV is endemic in cows. Yes, cows. Very important part of the food supply in the United States. People are drinking cow's milk. People are eating cow parts and pieces. And so this human papilloma wart virus, we have a source for it that's definitely non-sexual in origin. And the constant reinduction of HPV into people through the diet more than explains the fact that 100% of women who happen to be of childbearing age or who happen to be sexually active are getting it. Guys probably take them out to the ice cream parlor for a date. There's all kinds of ways to get HPV. And it seems that, so there's no way then men, and I'll finally bring you guys into this, can be either A, held responsible for a woman's cervical cancer, or B, can keep her from getting it by themselves getting either vaccinated or castrated or whatever they want to do. And so the prevalence of HPV among humans, 100%, the prevalence in our food supply, cows and cow products, suggests that there's plenty of places to look for human papillomavirus virus instead of the male-female sexual relationship. So we don't need to intervene here and tell men and women how, when, or in what circumstances they should sexually relate to each other, because it's clear that this virus, although it may go back and forth during sex, if you're having sex, that each person acquires it independently from other sources. And so this is something that's what you can call endemic. So whenever something affects 100% of the population, that means it's endemic. It means it's everywhere. And if something affects 100% of the population, then it cannot be used as a measuring tool to determine who is or is not at risk, because it fails to distinguish between the two because everybody has it. So in this case, we have human papillomavirus virus, which everyone has at some point or another in their life, which many people, their immune system just gets rid of by itself. So human papillomavirus virus as a source of disease, no matter what the strain, is simply not credible. And so if someone tells you that you have human papillomavirus virus, you can just thank them for the information and continue to live your life. Of course, this is only my opinion. There are numbers, but my opinion. So any action you choose to take or not take based on anything you might hear tonight is, of course, totally your responsibility, and I take no responsibility at all for that. Having said that, I will confess that since the birth of my youngest child, which is 22 years ago, I personally have not had a pap smear, and I have no plans of having a pap smear. But it's certainly reassuring to know that even if they did find something, it has no predictive value. And so, so what you should do then is obviously ignore the virus, ignore any tests for it, eat your tomatoes, and, you know, pick your partners based on something other than their HPV status, because it's simply not relevant. And this is also a very powerful tool being used to, again, control people, to control their sexual behavior. It's now been used as a tool to get people to consume vaccines, and it's just really endless. And the only control this really has on you is your belief. You know, is your belief in this silly love song, your belief in human papillomavirus and whether or not it's important. And so since the only thing at work here really is your personal belief, then that means that you really have a lot of power here in terms of setting yourself free and in terms of not becoming captive to the human papillomavirus virus. And so a bigger predictor of your chance of cervical cancer is probably really how many tomatoes you do or don't eat, or maybe how many vegetables that you eat. So it's really, really shocking that something presented to us doctors and to regular citizens as being of such incredible glaring importance that it requires the attention of each and every individual, you know, it's really amazing that we have, you know, .gov websites devoted to this, that we have industries devoted to this. And again, it's just simply a form of population control. And when I say population control, I don't mean necessarily murdering people or culling the population, but of controlling people's behavior. So getting women to show up every year to pay for an office visit, getting women to believe that they need health insurance, because what would they do without their pap smear and their mammogram? So we've previously talked about the true importance and impact of mammograms. So now we're seeing the true import and impact of pap smears and of cervical cancer and even looking for it. I mean, I've heard of people actually being devastated when they learn that their pap smear is not normal. So it's something you can easily, if I ignore. Now, some people have warts in various places. It turns out if your warts are on your regular skin, you can just use 17% salicylic acid or 17.5% salicylic acid. It clears it up very nicely. But the directions tell you to apply it, that almost never works. You need to put duct tape, D-U-C-T, tape over it. And that works. Change it twice a day. What if you have warts in a more delicate area? Let's say your genitals, where the skin is very, very delicate. Then, you know, it's recommended that you use Bedaflin. But the truth of the matter is most of those warts without treatment will go away. Most means more than 51%, probably higher than that. So if you have cervical warts, then probably the best way to go about it would be to wait, number one. Number two, eat your tomatoes. You know, increase your vegetable intake, because this is something that your immune system generally takes care of and gets rid of on its own. So if you have warts swimming in your genital area, your best bet, easiest way to go about it is to increase the power of your immune system. The easiest way to increase the power of your immune system is to improve and upgrade your diet. You know, if you're eating GMO, stop eating GMO. If you're not eating organic, eat organic. So non-GMO, eat organic, fresh vegetables. That means you buy them raw, and if you're going to eat cooked vegetables, by golly, you cook them yourself. So you buy everything raw, you cook what you want to cook, eat one salad a day, and that is the, you know, the best way to go, is to really directly work on your immune system. It does not seem that the medical intervention method, which is to freeze and burn these genital warts, is especially effective. What does that mean? I've had patients who've had genital warts burned and removed on many occasions, and they just keep coming back. Now, back then, of course, I was not enlightened, not aware of the really profound effect that diet can have. And so I didn't know what to advise these poor patients except to go see the specialist, which is where I sent them. And so there's been a fair amount of research in the past couple of decades indicating that simply boosting your immune system really handles it very well. I'd like to take a short break for station identification. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul channel. And today is Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. If there's any questions, either from the listeners or in the chat room, doesn't seem to be. Okay. All right, so they're talking in the chat room about swearing off dairy cows. I don't think it matters really what kind of cow. And in the chat room, they mentioned about HPV and handling fish. They have done studies with meat handlers, butchers. So butchers who butcher animals of any type, and especially fish, tend to get human papilloma wart virus on their hands and warts on their hands. This is very interesting because, obviously, they're not having sex with the fish. And so there are many environmental opportunities to get human papilloma wart virus. It is not exclusively or even mainly sexual transmission, it seems, because it is just really everywhere. Children have human papilloma wart virus on their hands. That's what causes the hand warts and foot warts. So these, the presence of these warts, that they're just everywhere, suggests that sexual transmission is not the dominant mode of transmission. Also, when you have sex, it's normal, just because of the friction, for some cells to rub off the top of the skin. And what that means is there's a healing process that takes place. And when that healing process takes place, the fibroblasts basically send out a signal attracting cells and nutrients from all over the body. And so this would be the mechanism whereby a wart would form, because what would happen in this area that's being repaired, the wart viruses would be attracted to that area during the repair or the healing process. And so it's not so much that the virus is transmitted by sex, because we know the frequency of HPV in men and women is 100%, but it's that during sex, because of the friction, skin is abraded, and as your body repairs that skin, it sends out a signal which causes something called chemotaxis, and that causes all the other cells in the body to say, hey, let's send stuff that we don't need. Some of it's going to be nutrients. Some of it's going to be human papilloma warts. And so then you get what a wart at that site. This is also why wearing a condom would, of course, stop the apparent transmission. Why? Because you don't have the friction. The condom takes the friction. The actual skin doesn't get the friction. You don't have the abrasion, and you don't have the healing response to heal the abrasion. So the condom could be effective in reducing warts, not because the warts are transmitted, but because the warts are a healing response to fixing tissue that's just worn from abrasion. So it's important to look critically at a lot of these things that we're told, that are fact, that we're told do this, do that to improve your health, when actually the action may not improve our health and may be totally irrelevant to our health and may even be harmful. So definitely, this HPV thing, just flush it, I guess, would be the thing to do. Okay, so somebody on the chat room is asking, is it true that there's no such thing as a virus? Maybe there is or isn't, but I don't think that's relevant to the discussion of HPV. I think the question is there an organism composed of DNA or RNA that can work its way into the cell, take over the DNA and RNA synthesis apparatus of the cell? Not clear. It's what scientists tell us. It would be a nice topic for a future discussion, a future radio show, where I could track it down, research it, see what the proof is on either side, and that will probably be an interesting topic. But if there is such a thing as a virus, and if HPV is a virus, then it's certainly a harmless one. I guess it would have to be the final assessment. And again, I think if you, as a woman, if you go ask your OBGYN how many cases of cervical cancer he detected last year, you would be surprised at how low that number would be. Or if you ask the doctor how many cervical biopsies did he have to do last year. This is just a regular run-of-the-mill OBGYN doctor, because it's really not that frequent an event. I'll just tell you a story about what happened when I was in practice. The year was 1990, is building my medical office. And so whenever you build a medical office, the question is, well, what should you put in this office? So I figured I need a waiting room, put some chairs in it. Then we get down to the equipment. What equipment should be bought for the exam rooms? Oh, my God. The vendors came by. Dr. Daniels, you're going to be doing pap smears. I said, yeah, I'm going to be doing pap smears. Well, you need to get this whiz-bang cryosurgery machine. See, it goes this way and that way and the other way. And when you get an abnormal pap smear, you don't need to send that patient to the OBGYN. No siree, Bob. You can keep that money in-house, right here in-house. And you can do that cryo and the this and the that on that patient all by yourself and keep that revenue and not send it downstream. I said, well, that sounds very interesting. How much is that machine going to cost? Dr. Daniels, it's only going to run you $15,000, and we got some easy payments for you. I said, boy, well, you know, I don't want to get the machine right now because, you know, maybe my patients really won't need that. So let me just wait and see. And, of course, I have an MBA, right? So I took the trouble of calculating how many times I'd have to do cryo in order to pay for that machine. I said, man, it's a lot of freezing and cryo. And so, of course, what ultimately happened was I didn't, you know, there just weren't any abnormal pathways, so there was no need for the machine. And one of my colleagues did buy a machine at a discounted rate, of course, and found that, of course, she didn't have much use for it, and she was stuck with all these payments. But, you know, doctors are constantly being marketed to buy these machines. And once a doctor gets stuck and buys one of these machines, then every pap smear all of a sudden needs, you know, aggressive therapy and aggressive intervention. And this is really a disservice to patients who can really get trapped into this. So I think that's really the story of cervical cancer, not only cervical cancer, but because if you start with cervical cancer, you can't figure anything out. If you start with human papilloma wart virus, you realize that it can't possibly cause cervical cancer because 100% of people have it, and only 0.36% of people get, or should say die from cervical cancer. So then the presence of cervical cancer must be a coincidence. And in fact, it might be that the presence of cervical cancer might even be protective, because women who die of cervical cancer, only 91% have the virus, whereas healthy women, 100% of them, actually get the virus during their lifetime. And then they've also found that the human papilloma wart virus lives on the skin of healthy people and causes no disease. So this is another case of an innocent bystander, the human papilloma wart virus, being blamed for a human condition, in this case, cervical cancer. So now, you'll see studies, or you may see research studies, showing that when there's cervical cancer, the HPV is present. But what the studies don't look at is when there's not cervical cancer, is HPV present, either at the cervix or anyplace else on the body. And so the fact that HPV is present on the body of many individuals as normal flora or normal organisms, just like lactobacillus, indicates that it's not a cancer-causing thing. In order for it to cause cancer, you have to see that it occurs with higher frequency in those who are affected by the cancer or who die of it, but actually it's in lesser frequency. It's only 91% in them. It's 100% in everybody else. So it's not something to worry about. So I'd like to let people know that they can visit my website, vitalitycapsules.com. I have my book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful, which actually is a diet that is definitely one to boost the immune system. And, of course, people who want to know more about working with me one-on-one with their medical condition, they can go to vitalitycapsules.com and click on Discovery Session and talk to me that way. So that is really it for tonight. We have 3 minutes left, so if there's any questions, I can probably take one question. And let me see if I can find my music. Oh, here we are. One question. Hi, this is Dr. Daniels. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, this is Dr. Daniels. Did you have a question?
Yes. Does the question have to be related to what we were just listening to?
No, it can be anything at this point. We've only got 2 minutes.
Okay, I have a question. I ordered your Candida cleaner, and I haven't started using it yet because I'm
mm-hmm.
already a thin person. I weigh 120, and doing the diet, of course, I lost. Well, I actually weighed 125 when I started the diet, and now I weigh 120. But I don't want to continue to lose weight because I'm already very thin. Is it? Do I have to continue with that diet, or is there any other thing that I can do to stop the weight loss?
You can eat more cooked food, especially brown rice, and that will put the weight back on.
The brown rice?
Yes, brown rice. Eat more of it.
And also, the I have hair loss from what I have going on with the candida. Is the black strap molasses okay for me to take?
Oh, yeah, it's okay. It usually helps with hair growth, actually. I mean, not by itself, but it's a positive effect. On hair growth. So the black strap molasses would definitely be okay to take. So that is it. We are done for tonight, and we'll see you next week. And if you sign up in the list, you'll get a notice of the topic. Okay.